G'day and welcome to Oceanic Gaming Radio. That's OGR, baby. How you doing? Thank you for joining us. It is Monday night, 7 o'clock-ish AWST PM. And yeah, we're here to give you the latest, hottest freaking gaming news that you can get your hands on. Yeah, my name's Capo, Captain Perth. And in the background, you might hear my very loud son, Theodore. But also alongside us is...
He wants to get on the podcast, doesn't he, Kevin?
Yeah,
he just listen, wants to get in there, mate.
It's a bit too early, okay? I don't know how well he can construct his sentences, okay? Let alone would they be coherent. But anyways, alongside me, Grizzly Gaming 86 and Pavel Overface. Fellas, how are we? Good?
Howdy, friends.
Doing good, man.
Yeah.
I'm also doing good.
What's new, mate?
What's new? Not too much. I got to see some of our very lovely regular listeners over the last couple of days. Caught up with our friend Sukai as well as Jim. Ran into them in the city on Friday night.
Was it like ran into them or was it planned?
No, no, no. I did a quiz night with Sukai, which was really fun, with some of the, Stream nuts. Perth crew, which is really cool.
And wicked.
Just as we were finishing up, Jim messages me and is like, "Y'all finishing up? Come on down. The Goa team are hanging out." So,
sick.
We ran over, managed to see Pete as well, which is all good. Shout out, Pete.
Oh, how cool. That's good. Big Pete and the Goa team. Honestly, go and check out their podcasts. They've got multiple podcasts, I believe.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So the Game on Oz team, good bunch of legends. Go and check them out. Straight Jacket Jim and Pete. Fucking
Stormy.
Legends. And Stormy.
And Stormy.
Stormy. Mm-hmm. Stormy. But, that sounds amazing, mate. So catching up with the community.
Absolute blast. Bloody loved it.
How many beers were consumed, Pav, across these events, mate? Couple?
A couple. Let's just say a couple. Yeah. Had a few. Yeah. I got a bit of a rub elbow and... I got convinced to stay out with another group of friends a bit longer than I expected, but yeah, it was good.
Hey, hell yeah, that's awesome. Well, and Grizzly, what about you, mate? What's new since last week?
I played a gig on Saturday night, Cap, for his 60th birthday. It was fantastic, mate. It was really good. Good to play some. I'm in a band. We play some old classic rock and roll numbers. That was really great.
Yeah, which one went off the most?
Dude, we started playing a David Bowie song. We could be heroes.
Oh,
one day. And
what's your favorite Bowie song?
Well, I actually like the crossover, the dancing in the streets with Mick Jagger and David Bowie.
I really like that.
Yeah, that's
I think my favorite's put on your red shoes and dance the blues.
Yes.
Let's dance. That's my favorite by far.
It's such a good song. Actually, I think that might have been in that. It was either that one or Heroes as the two that we're going to try, because we have never played a Bowie song, and we've been in this outfit for nearly 10 years now. We've never done a Bowie song.
Wow.
We always try to cover at least one of all the best old school. You know, play Van Morrison, we play Creedence, we play, we did play an Eagles song. You basically go through and you try to learn a couple of each kind of, you know, hit. Yeah. So never done a Bowie song. So it was good. It's been good, mate.
Oh,
nice new one,
mate. Anything else?
Cap, I've been playing a fair bit of World of Warcraft, mate. And
I'm aware.
I thought this might be an opportunity because we did have someone reach out and say, I heard you guys are playing World of Warcraft. Do you have a guild? No.
We don't.
We don't. But you can add me personally, anyone listening. I won't mind.
Yep.
My detail is hashtag Grizzly6942. Send me your friend request.
Let me get mine up. Hang on. What's mine? I think
we'll do some dungos for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm fucking keen. My username's Captain Perth, one word, hashtag 6710. That's hashtag 6710.
6942 for me. There you go, mate. Very exciting.
Yeah. Just flick us a message on Discord just so we know who you are. If in case we're like, who the fuck is this person? We'd love to play some video games, especially now. We're kind of getting to the crux now before the new expansion, Grizz, because I kind of feel in between on things at the moment because, you know, like we're still in old content and it's not really worthwhile doing much. I don't know, doing anything, you know, of significance at the moment, because like all of the gear and stuff's going to be invalidated within the next few weeks. So I've just kind of been leveling alts, which is, again, I'm pretty sure I've said this every week, but it's been really good.
You've got a few alts now, Cap. You've got a couple there in the bank ready for Dragon Fight release, don't you?
Yeah, I've got a shitload. Yep. And then next week we've got the next stage of the patch is being released, the pre-patch for WoW before Dragonflight releases, where they're releasing the new race of playable characters, the Drakthea. We were like scaly kind of dragon people who have two alternate forms. They have like the dragon form and the kind of like draconid human kind of form. Right. Yeah. And they've also got the new class, which is the Evoker, and that's kind of like these basically, you know, Drakthea that harness the skills and abilities of the dragon flights within the Warcraft lore. So they do like, you know, they have different dragon flights. So the red dragon flight, blue, brown, no, black and bronze, and like each one has a different kind of school of magic. So like blue is like magic-y magic, and then red's like fire and destruction, and then black is kind of like defense and all that kind of stuff. And
now there is a healer and DPS, isn't there, Cap?
Healer and a DPS class, and they kind of use those different, like so like the healer class is all about using the bronze dragon flight, which they control time, so you're like rewinding people's wounds.
Right.
And then the green dragon flight, which are like, you know, heals and all that kind of stuff. And then I believe the DPS class is kind of using a lot of red dragon flight and blue dragon flight stuff to do like damaging spells. So it's pretty fucking cool. They're also introducing this new mechanic in WoW, which hasn't existed till now. And it's kind of this idea of like empowering your attacks by holding down a button for longer, which will go through phases of higher strength of the attack.
I like that, dude. Is there any skill shot involved in that, Cap? If you release at a right window, does it like
maybe
is there any skill? Like I noticed about this with Davo, and I feel like this is a, I mean, it's like we kind of saw this in Dota 2, but it opens up if this is successful right on this class, Cap, can you see them using this push for power on other classes throughout WoW, other abilities?
Maybe. I suppose the issue is a lot of characters are literally just like click a target and perform your spells on target by pressing buttons, whereas maybe there are, but and how do you scale that in a way that is rewarding to players, but then also doesn't mean that like really high, like upper professional players don't just get this basically a damage boost because you've kind of made risk reward for skill shots for this particular class, but like a gifted player can just completely own people because they have this OP class, because they can just manage to hit these skills.
I can't do that.
So it's hard. It's kind of hard to like, I think, and the thing is WoW is like inherently a tab targeting, like, you know, select a target, perform your spells on it. Generally, there are skill shots, but yeah.
I want to tell you something funny, Cap. First time I ever played WoW, I think I may have told you this before, potentially. I was on dial-up internet when the original came out, and I actually thought WoW was a turn-based game because the ping was so bad. I would initiate my command, and a good 5 seconds later, it would do it. And I'd queue them up.
Oh, dude, that's amazing! I remember like back in the old days when living with mum and dad, and you know, like you'd have some really shitty internet, and the back in ye olden days playing vanilla WoW. Like, oh man, I used to have a fucking blast when I was a kid. Like, I remember I was so excited to play WoW once when I was like, I don't know how old I was. I would have been like, I don't know, 14, 15 or something. I like just jumped because I was fucking excited to play WoW and fucking hit my head on the door frame and open up this massive fucking gash in my head. I had to get stitches, and I knocked myself out for like 5 seconds.
That Jordan, is
my brother thought hilarious. I killed myself fucking jumping into the door frame because it like shook the whole house. Honestly, hilarious. Crazy. But yeah, that's probably my...
The disadvantages of being tall and loving video games, mate.
Exactly. Yeah, I was so fucking excited to get on and play some World of Warcraft. I knocked myself out, But yeah, I'm really excited to play some more WoW. So,
enough about WoW. Enough about me, Cap. What's happening in your world, mate?
Not a lot, dude. Just baby things, really. I hate to kind of regurgitate the same shit each week, but yeah, just kind of feeding this small infant every few hours. But it feels like it's slowly getting easier. You know, we're kind of like the time between feeds is slowly expanding, and I feel like us as parents, we know how to kind of respond to our child a lot better now in terms of like what he probably needs and wants. Mm-hmm. I think the sleep is slowly coming in, which is nice. So we definitely have, I've got like an app that we record sleep time, and we can see a very clear night and day cycle in his naps, which has been great. And he's had a few 5-hour sleeps at night, which has been like amazing for a fucking 6-week-old baby. You know, newborns aren't supposed to have anything until about 3 months. So it's been kind of amazing having that. So I know every baby's kind of different. Some babies do tend to, you know, have something, and then some, you know, just continue to feed every 2 hours for, you know, the first 3 months, which I can't imagine doing that for 3 months. That sounds fucked. So, but yeah, so anyway, so we're kind of getting there now. So it's been really good.
Nice, mate. Exciting. Good to hear.
So yeah, I was saying to Mia on the weekend, like, I felt like Sunday was the first day I really felt like I wasn't just babysitting, and it was kind of like a part of my daily routine. And like, we kind of just, you know, Theo's like just part of the, not that we didn't feel that he was part of the family, but it felt like this is life now. You know
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Was,
you've
which was cool. It was a good
you've
feeling.
You've accepted it, and you're kind of just, you're loving it, mate. That's it.
I think it also coincided with a good sleep.
Yeah. Amazing how fucked you are when you haven't got sleep for a couple of days, eh?
Oh, some days I'm just delirious, but I do it to myself because I'm like, okay, Theo's asleep. Okay, it's probably his night sleep, so I might be able to get like 2 hours of games in now if I just pump it. And then I'm like, oh, it's 2 a.m. in the morning and he's just waking up now, and I've got to deal with it for an hour. So I definitely don't do myself any favors, but, you know, got a war's out, Grizz, and I need to get
well, should
through
we talk
it.
About that?
Before
should
I go back
about
to work.
That, Cap?
Yeah, absolutely. But before we jump into that, Grizz, as always, we've got to thank you, the listener. Not you, Grizz.
Oh, right.
You, the listener, listening at home. Yeah, sorry to get you excited there. You know, no thanks for you, but yeah, anyways, thank you for listening to this podcast. Thank you for listening to us record this podcast live. You can listen to it being recorded live every Monday, 7 p.m. AWST on twitch.tv/OceanicGamingRadio. That's one word. And yeah, we record the show live, baby. Otherwise, if you're listening at home, you know, whilst you're doing your chores or whatever it is, we appreciate you big time. Now, we also appreciate our wonderful Patreons. If you would like to support the show financially, and it's not expected, if you don't support it financially, though, you have to at least tell one person about the show. So, joke's on you, people at home listening. Our patrons, you fucking rock. Thank you so much for supporting us. You know who you are, but we're going to tell you who they are anyway. Sukai, Moosey, Caging Run, Sergeant Paul, Lee, GD, and J-Libs. Guys, you're fucking awesome. Appreciate it. Now, what's on the menu for tonight, baby? A lot. We got a lot on, actually. Big episode.
I'm actually very excited about this episode. Dude, there is some serious fucking news stories going down, mate.
There's some fucking shit going down. Like, there's some serious shit. So, look, we're going to start off with a bit of a God of War, Ragnarok, and we're calling it a recap by Cap. So there you go. I'm going to just sort of give you the rundown. Look, I won't go hard into spoilers. I might sort of talk about some mechanics in the game. But I won't go into story spoilers or anything like that. So, but I will give you guys plenty of warning before we start that, just so you're aware. So, if you don't want to listen to that, totally understand. And feel free to jump along into the episode. Now, massive shit going on with the Doom. What's the fucking latest one called, Grizz? Doom Eternal soundtrack and the big fallout from that. Holy fuck, there is some shit going down with that, and we'll tell you the full story very shortly. Also, Japan is loving PC gaming all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, and we're going to talk about that as well. Final Fantasy 16 had a little chit-chat with IGN, and we just wanted to talk about some of the main points out of that interview because it's actually quite interesting. Kind of where they're going with the direction of the series at the moment. And Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, bit of a leaky boat, big holes in the hull. So we're going to talk about the leaks that have happened recently. As always, we've also got the OGR poll. Now, what the fuck was that about, Grizz? I can't remember what we actually did.
It was Doom related.
That's
Doom
right. Related. Yeah, I could remember. So, yeah, we'll talk about that probably whilst we're talking about Doom. And then, obviously, as always, we've got the quick fire. So, shall we, Grizz? Shall we jump in? I think we shall.
Let's do it.
All right. Yeah, that's our little thing. No, sure. You can't do that. That's surely, I think that's illegal. All right. So, God of War is amazing. Absolutely
is
awesome.
It? Yeah, it's good. Cat. Brilliant. Yep.
Yeah, it's okay. Been amazing so far. It's also scoring incredibly well. Definitely going to be a game of the year contender. Now, before I kind of dive into anything, as I mentioned, I'm probably going to talk a little bit about some of the mechanics that I've experienced in the game. They're not really that spoilery or anything, but definitely if you're not interested, if you want a clean blank slate,
Before you give the Caps recap, this is probably for my mum that's listening or someone that has no idea what God of War is. So God of War Ragnarok released last week, came out in PS4, PS5. It is the 9th installment in a gaming series that's been around for quite a long time.
Oh, yeah.
It's based on a bit of Norse mythology, set in ancient Scandinavia, and features a series with a protagonist called Kratos and his teenage son Atreus. That's kind of setting the scene. Caps recap. Let's go. Yep. Give it to me, mate.
Yeah. So look, the first game kind of was Kratos and Atreus taking Atreus' mum's ashes to this mountain to lay her to rest, and then basically, long and short, they unravel all these different characters within Norse mythology, including Balder and Freya. And Thor pops up and, Odin is alluded to and all that kind of stuff. So, it's just all this shit going on. And we find out at the very end that Atreus is actually the god Loki, basically. And Kratos is the god of war for Greek mythology, effectively. So that's kind of the scene. And so we're carrying on from when we found out that basically Atreus finds out that he's Loki. So that was the big fucking story quip of number one. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't already know that, I'm sorry, but now you do. Now, I'm not going to talk too much about the story, but the story continues on from there. The characters are so well fleshed out. I mean, obviously you have the anchor point of God of War 1 and you're dealing with all your similar characters. Like you've got Brock and Sindri, the dwarves, and they've got this really funny,
witty banter. The dialogue is so great with those guys. They kind of fucking like shit on each other all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But they're best mates again. In the first movie they kind of crack the shits at one another, but they're really good friends again. Obviously you've got Atreus and Kratos back again, voiced by Sonny Sujic. I can't pronounce his last name. It's like Eastern European. It's just a bit too hard for me. And Christopher Judge is voicing Kratos, and their dynamic is just awesome. I kind of expressed that I didn't like in the first one how they had this break point where Atreus just turns into a complete bastard because he like finds out he's a god, and then he just basically shits on everyone because they're not gods, and then he kind of just has like a brat stage, and it felt really like I just couldn't wait to get through that, and eventually you do, but. That hasn't really happened again. It's been quite good. It still feels like there's this like father son, like really strong father son relationship where Kratos is trying to lead Atreus, as best he can, but also, there's prophecy that needs to happen as well. But Kratos is like, well, I don't really want to do that because it hasn't gone too well for me in the past. He's got this fucking wake of dead Greek gods behind him, basically. He doesn't really want to start a big biff with any gods. So the story's really good. It continues on. The characters are brilliant. Some of the dialogue with some of the sort of not so main characters, I thought the character, the voice acting was a little bit weak. The rest of it's been great. So just something to look out for. There was a couple of things where I was just like, "Ooh, that's a bit. It's okay, but it's not what I expected from God of War." Some of the minor characters, not the main characters.
Now, Cap, I read somewhere that you don't need to have played the previous games to know what's going on. They do.
Yes, there is a recap you can watch at the beginning, which will kind of show you the beginning, the first game, and explain to you what's happened prior. So you could actually probably quite happily jump straight into this game if you actually really wanted to. I'd recommend playing the first one because it's brilliant. But yeah, this, and I tell you what, in fact, playing the first game and playing the second game, to me, God of War Ragnarok feels like God of War 1.5. It's so similar to the original game in so many ways that it doesn't feel like a massive deviation. It just kind of feels like a very minor build on top, like almost a DLC, but obviously there's so much of game there for you to play. It's obviously worth, you know, full price.
Do you feel, Cap, that it being not too different from the last re-edition is works in its favor for the franchise?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think they haven't deviated too far. And where they have deviated, I think it's in areas, again, I don't want to do any spoilers, but and I won't, but just the ways, just in the ways you control the game and stuff, at certain moments you will notice that, oh, this is a nice change of pace, this is a good way to kind of give me something a little bit different, but also kind of quite still reminiscent of what the first game was. So that's been really good. I will say one thing about systems and I guess just the leveling up process. So again, spoilers, but you have access to all of his weapons from the get go. So you have the axe, you have the chaos blades from day dot. So
he has a whip as well, doesn't he? Some whip thing.
Well, that's kind of what the chaos blades are. They're kind of like that. Right. You can whip them and chuck them out. And they kind of fling around. But the cool thing is the chaos blades and the frost axe kind of, they work off one another. So if an enemy is frosted from you hitting it a lot with your axe, then if you change to the chaos blades, you're going to do extra damage whilst they have the cold debuff, basically. So there's a lot of interesting kind of mechanics that sort of make it worth your while to switch between the two. So that's
a little
really
bit of metagaming in there. I remember the first one had things like, you know, you'd want to use your fists against certain enemies that were weak to punching them and bits and pieces like that, and you would situational around how you approach them was definitely what you needed to do.
Absolutely. I haven't had any reason to use my fists. It's kind of just if you forget to recall your axe and you're like, oh fuck, he's right in front of me, come here mate, like I'm biff you. So you and you biff him, so which is great. But it's been that's been great, and they've kind of wiped the traits clean, so you do need to go and rebuy all your stuff, obviously. So you know, the ability to hold like long hold your axe throws and all that kind of stuff to do extra damage or
now I don't know whether this is spoilerish or not, Cap, so maybe choose to answer this or not, but in terms of the skill trees, have they reused any of the skills that you can purchase on your weapons?
I think it's been a while since I played the first one, but for example, you know how you could hold down the R1 button and you could do a big wave of frost along the ground? They have that again, for example. There's a few new skills and stuff for sure. And
I guess that kind of works thematically, though, as you go from one game to the next, that you're going to have the same things, you know? So
yeah, exactly. And I'll just say, like Atreus's skill tree is much more fleshed out this time around as well, and you'll kind of see why in the game.
It was very simplistic in the last one. You could just choose I think maybe a couple of different arrows.
It was like four or five pieces. And you could kind of like, you know, do this, that. So they both have two like very like kind of fleshed out skill trees. Now I couldn't remember in the first one if they had things like relics and stuff, but they have these things called relics now, basically, which gives you more like special abilities, and then you obviously also have the runic attacks where you could choose what your special runic attack was, and that's per that is per weapon. So you have a runic attack for your chains and a runic attack for your axe. Now, have I lost you yet? Because dude, like, I forget I have shit that I can do in my arsenal when I'm in combat.
So just the other game did have runic attacks that were in the form of gems that you would socket into your weapons, and then you'd get that runic attack.
So similar, same kind of process now, but I feel like one issue with this game is they don't layer it on you. They kind of they do a little bit, but I feel like I just had too much to do. And I forgot, you know, and then I find myself doing like very basic attacks against enemies because it works, and then I feel like I'm not using the system to its fullest, and it makes me feel bad about it. You know what I mean?
I remember coming back to the last God of War, the previous one, and kicking off where I started last time and being so completely overwhelmed with the combat mechanics and all of the things I'd unlocked and all and how to use the controller that I just started again to start again and kind of learn learn from the go.
It's but yeah, I do feel like I definitely don't want to stop playing for that reason, but also I definitely feel like I don't want to stop playing because I'm having a fucking blast.
Captain Pants hooked.
I think so. I'm still kind of in what I would say is the prologue, and I've probably been playing for maybe 7 hours dotted throughout last week, which isn't a huge amount of hours, I know, but I have a baby, so it's difficult to find fucking time. But yeah, so the prologue's kind of huge. I feel like I'm not. I don't want to go into spoilers, but basically, it's been fairly linear to where I am now. But I know that there is a point where it does open up quite a lot. But I'm still not quite there yet. So
not there yet.
I feel like I'm probably approaching that moment in the game. So just so you people at home know, I mean, there's a few side stuff I was able to do along the way. And I probably could have just like mainlined it really quickly. But like, if you want to do pretty much everything up until the point where I've got to, and I'm still not at like the big open world zone, basically you're looking at probably about 7 or 8 hours plus, if you're going to take your time and have a bit of a look around. And there's definitely reasons to take your time, because some of the, like the side quests that I did, they were fucking cool. Like there's some shit that happens, and maybe we'll talk a bit. We might in a month's time or something, Grizz, when you get your hands on it or something.
Yeah.
We can have a bit better chat about it. And again, I don't really want to go into spoilers, but I feel like the zones that I've been to, there's some really interesting landmark stuff that kind of give you reasons to do side quests. It's not go and collect 5 boar pelts or anything like that. It's like actual meaningful things happening in those regions that have an effect that is lore implicative.
Cool.
Is that a word?
I like that.
Just fucking made that up. But yeah, it's very, very fucking cool. So super enjoying it. Khal Drogo in chat saying his GF is hooked on the game, reading the glossaries about enemies and looting all the chests. I'm doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I'm doing the exact same thing, reading every single little bit. Like the lore entries are quite interesting, especially setting the stage for, I guess, just some background information about things happening in the regions that you're in or some of the enemies. And there are kind of some interesting tidbits about enemy, you know, it has like the bestiary kind of thing. And then it tells you some things.
They do that in the last game had a similar thing. It's so detailed and great.
Oh, dude.
I think that they have a thing that's linked to the amount that you kill and you unlock more information as you go about them.
I don't know if they have it anymore, but they do have like the more you use your skills, you unlock higher tiers of the skill. And I don't really quite understand whether that gives me more damage or something, but I think it might affect. Oh no, you can equip certain modifiers to your skills. So I think for the one that I have been using a lot, it gave me the option to give a modifier which either made it do slightly more damage, inflict a longer stun, or add frost damage to the thing. But yeah, honestly, the game is fucking exceptional. It is like astronomically gorgeous. I've been playing it on my PC monitor just because that's where I play my video games, and dude, the zones are just unbelievable. They're beautiful. Scooting around, you use your boat again in certain areas, and just like cruising around, grabbing stuff and running into barrels and collecting items so that you can upgrade your armor is great.
Yeah.
One thing when it comes to the armor, I never know what to commit to, because I don't want to have to commit to an armor and then be like, okay, well, this armor's level 5 now, and I can't really compare whether another set of armor I get later is better than this, because the other armor I get later is going to be level 1, so the stats are all out of whack. Yeah. And it's hard to really make that figure out,
I wonder if that's trying to reward you for exploration to get materials, maybe.
Absolutely, I think so. Because I was kind of wondering, I wonder if I just tried to level everything up. But I don't think I'd have enough stuff right now to do it even remotely. Because I've got about 5 or 6 armor sets that I could, including pre-order bonus stuff, that I could get. And I definitely could not upgrade the whole lot to, you know, a reasonable level at the moment, or like even a couple of levels up. So I don't know. I'm kind of in this weird spot. I've kind of committed to just going all in on strength so I do more damage, because I just like going glass cannonballs. I just reckon they're the funnest. But yeah, that's kind of how I've been playing the game so far. But yeah, honestly, Grizz, and people at home, if you want to play a game, oh my God, this is the game.
Cap, I got a couple of questions here for you, mate. The first one is, which graphics settings did you use? We talked about couple of different ones in the last OGR episode. What did you land on, mate, and why?
Yeah. So, look, I just like a smooth game experience. And generally, from my perspective, games are probably going to look fucking amazing regardless of whether they're on some kind of... Okay. I basically just put it on performance mode. Yeah. I didn't put it on amazing graphics mode because it already looks fucking
epic. You wanted that.
And I just wanted a constant frame rate.
And are you getting a stable frame rate, Cap?
I have not seen a single drop in frames. Okay. And there's been some shit that's been going on my screen and I've not noticed a single thing.
All right.
So yeah, I think you basically get the option to favor performance or graphics or like, you know, favor FPS or like graphic quality. And then you have another thing that you can slide along that has like three options based on like something else that I couldn't remember. And I basically just went pure performance just for that buttery smooth FPS because I cannot stand a low frame rate. It bothers me immensely. So as a PC gamer, it has to be high frame rate. So that's why I went with it and it's been amazing.
Cap, accessibility options. Did you wander into that menu? Did you change any settings, mate? Did you turn anything on and off? What did you think?
I always play with captions, and I was blown away with how much fandangling you can do with the caption system. You can change the colors, all kinds of stuff. You know, the accessibility options, I mean, we've spoken about them before, but you can even do things like if you wanted to, you can change the texture of each of the characters to a primary color so you can identify them easily if you had difficulty seeing. It's been unbelievable, dude. The amount of work that's gone into the accessibility options is astronomical. But as a caption aficionado, because I just miss shit all the time, I mishear things. So it's kind of nice to have captions going all the time. They have captions for, you know, the main dialogue, and you can choose to turn them off for like when you're in combat and stuff. But I just have captions across the whole board, and you can increase their size. You can change the background of the captions. So if you want them just to be text on, you know, the video, you can, or you can make the background of the text slightly blurry. So yeah, it's quite impressive the amount of accessibility they got. But yeah, so I have played with it a little bit and I've smashed some quite large captions on my screen, which has been great. So
pretty good.
Been really good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
So
now, Cap, I thought, because I haven't played the game, mate, and I quite often do this, I pull some reviews out. I didn't tell Pav or you this, but I figure this is the new section, mate. It's going to be called Grizzly's Reviews, the Brilliant, the Shit, and the Humorous. I pick a good review, I pick a shit review, and I pick a funny review, and I read them out to you boys.
Excellent.
And we see how we go.
Let's fucking go.
We'll start with the Brilliant. God of War Ragnarok maximizes and perfects everything that was already great about the prequel. Storytelling, artwork, dialogue, audio, gameplay mechanics and combat are crafted with so much love for the smallest detail that it's astounding. The game is so ultra-polished that it comes close to perfection, and man, what an eye-opener the graphics are. One of the few real next-gen titles and one of the best games ever made, 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't call it 10 out of 10. I'd give it a 9, in all honesty, at this stage.
There are some things
about, like, I have kind of expressed some of the things that, you know, have bothered me about the game. But another thing that has bothered me a little bit is it kind of has that feeling that I got from Uncharted, where it's kind of like puzzle combat, walking through here. So it does have that feeling a little. I mean, it's a fucking video game. I know that it's going to feel like that. But sometimes it can feel quite a little bit jarring. But I mean, you know.
So you saying that's not the first time I've heard that. I've heard some of the pacing is a little bit funny on some of it.
It is weird. And like you meet one particular character, and I thought that meeting was quite underwhelming. And I'll just leave it at that. It was good, but the lead up to it, I was just like, oh, okay, here we are. Right. Oh, okay. Basically. So I'm just going to leave it at that, right?
All right.
But yeah.
Well, let me read my shit review out for you, Cap. Here we go. A few really good fights and an awesome story, unfortunately ruined by terrible pacing and gameplay. The majority of the game is spent frustratingly mandatory fetch quests, puzzles, and walking simulation and unskippable cutscenes. If you've already bought into the story from the first game, it might be worth your time. But if you're looking for a fun video game, this isn't it.
Wow. Okay. That just sounds like someone who, like, it's not a game for them, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, it's kind of like, why
someone
did you
who's also not invested in the story at all.
Yeah. And, but it's kind of like, what, like, I wouldn't go and write a review on NBA 2K25 or whatever it is, like, you know, because I just wouldn't enjoy it. And it just sounds like that person plays FIFA every day, which, hey, if you're listening at home and you play FIFA every day, that's fine. But that's probably the game you like to play. And it just feels like that's probably not the right game for them. I don't know.
Call of Duty or FIFA right there, Cap, I'm calling it.
I don't know. I don't. The pacing can be a little bit off, but it's not that bad. Like, fucking hell.
Now, let me read this funny one to you. This has to be Jimmy Stubbs. This is Jimmy Stubbs has written this fucking review.
Awesome.
Bald man has no good music. Horrible, disgusting, effeminate players. Sonic Frontiers is better.
I tell you what, there isn't an awful lot of music in the game. That's one thing I noticed. There's some sections where I'm like, is my sound on? And then I like just press the button to like do a combat move. And I'm like, oh yeah, it is on. Okay. That's weird. Like, I don't know. Just like, there are some sections where I'm just like, where's the fucking music? But that's an interesting one that it brings that up. Cause I'd have noticed that actually. Yeah. But when the music does play, it's like, burr, and you're just like, oh fuck, something's happening.
Build that tension, mate. There is definitely something to say for moments of silence. It definitely kind of, cause then the music fucking gets you. And it comes out. The game that does that fantastic is the Dark Souls series, Cap. Definitely has moments of silence quite often.
Absolutely. There's a lot of
silence.
And then
the boss fights come in and it's like all this like grandeur music popping off, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Usage of music and silence is huge. Actually, the next story we'll be talking about is a lot about music. Funnily, we should be talking about. But yeah, let's wrap this up, Grizz, because I haven't really got an awful lot more to say about it. And I would like to revisit this once you've played it as well.
One more question. This is the thing that must be on everyone's lips, Cap. Will this be Game of the Year? More importantly, will this turn from an Elden Ring podcast into a God of War podcast?
No.
You have it.
It's just not Elden Ring. Okay. That's my okay. If you're gonna quote anything, here's my quote about God of War. God of War is not Elden Ring.
Okay. Put it on Twitter.
Yeah, put it on Twitter.
Clip it and ship it.
That's my fucking review. But it's a fucking good game. It's incredibly solid and worth your time. I've really enjoyed enjoyed myself so far.
Did you see Sukai's comment?
Yeah.
You motherfucker.
But yeah, anyway, so go home, grab yourself a copy of Elden Ring and give that a play on your PS5. But no, honestly, God of War Ragnarok, definitely worth a play. So yeah, anyways, we'll revisit that once you've had a chance to give it a crack, Grizz. Can you see it in your future anytime soon?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. I will give it a crack. I'm very excited about the WoW expansion, so it might have to wait a little bit.
Yeah.
But we'll get there. Yeah.
Brilliant. We'll get there. Brilliant, brilliant. Cool bananas. Okay. Well, look, Grizz, speaking of music, as we just aforementioned, some pretty crazy shit has been happening with Bethesda's Doom. Now, I'm going to give a brief overview because there's been a lot of fucking, like, kind of, I don't know, aspects to this particular story. But let me just take you slightly back.
We could seriously sit here and talk about what happened and it would take the whole episode, Cap. Yeah.
Doom obviously had its new iteration in, I think, 2016 or 18. I think it was 16. No, hang on. Maybe it was 18. I think it might have been 18, actually. So
Doom 2016 was the original, I think. I'm pretty sure, wasn't it?
Was it? Yeah, anyways, one of the newest one that was kind of like Bethesda's take on the Doom series after they bought the IP, that's when it came out. Now, one of the reasons I think the games did...
Sorry, it's 2020. Doom Eternal was 2020. Yeah.
Oh, wait, that's Eternal. When was the just Doom?
The original is 2016. Doom was 2016. Yeah.
Okay, 2016. So, anyways, that game came out, and it, I think, what really gave it the edge was like it kind of took the Doom, quick paced kind of first person combat, like very demonic, all that kind of shit, but it paired it with this insanely banging fucking heavy metal rock OST, and it just, it was unbelievable. If you were even remotely, like, it just, it suited it perfectly. And the guy who created that was this Australian composer, Mick Gordon. So he did an incredibly fucking good job. Fast forward 4 years to 2020, Doom Eternal comes out. The first thing that people notice about Doom Eternal is that the soundtracks are, this is a bit shit. Like, is anyone
didn't
else
have the impact,
this is a bit
did
shit?
It?
Yeah. Not didn't even have the remote impact. Close. No. Nah. The opening track for Doom 1 just had this, like, you know, it was just this sick riding fucking banging tune.
I think the biggest thing, Cap, it felt like it didn't fit the game that you were playing. Whereas the 2016 Doom was like, it just got you so pumped because the music was fitting with the scenes that you were playing, and it was really well put together. And that just didn't really have it for Doom Eternal. Like that.
Yeah. And fans pointed this out and, you know, obviously were kind of upset about it because they kind of wanted that again, you know. So, you know, gamers being gamers, they crack the shits. And then the lead game designer for Doom Eternal, his name is Marty Stratton. He basically came out and said, well, you can blame that all on Mick Gordon. He's a fucking idiot. He is so unprofessional. He wouldn't do things on time, and his music sucks. So that's why this soundtrack and OST is so bad. And he posted that on Reddit, right? Anyways, I think a week passed or something like that, and Mick Gordon released this huge expose on Medium, which is like a blogging platform, and basically just went into the nuts and bolts of how toxic the work culture was in Bethesda and in relation to Doom Eternal, specifically singling out Marty Stratton. Now, I will say, before we
Jim says, probably took him that long to get a legal team and what and bits and pieces
together.
Oh,
was it 3 years?
It's probably 3 years since the game released. So it's taken that long for them.
Oh, he posted that okay, so I thought it was a bit more recent than that, but Jim's saying that it was posted 3 years ago. So that makes sense. So basically he's posted that and, basically labeled Mick Gordon as just this complete, like, useless fucking composer, which doesn't make much sense given how fucking banging the original soundtrack was. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so people kind of took it on face value and just assumed that Mick Gordon was just, shit at his job, essentially. Anyways, 3 years pass, according to Jim, and basically Mick Gordon releases this big expose. And kind of singles out Marty Stratton and his leadership. But I will say, before we dive in, Mick Gordon did sort of initially say in his expose, don't go on a witch hunt. That's what's happened to me. I just need to set the record straight, basically.
Yeah, sorted out. So
what effectively has happened is Mick Gordon was given these insanely tight deadlines. So I think he was asked to basically compose music for 2 levels per month leading up to the release of the game. Now, he said, not impossible, but insanely tight to do that. So he's working as a contractor on this game. Now, what happens along that time is he's struggling to kind of get responses from Bethesda. And
they weren't responding to him.
Mm. Yeah, they were taking weeks to get back to him on questions, but also they didn't even have any information about the story's lore, what these levels were going to look like, and a bunch of other shit. So he was just going fucking blind. So he's just trying to push out these tracks, without a fucking light in the dark, basically. So he's really struggling to get anything happening. And then basically this, like, he sends a few things to Marty, and Marty just sends these insanely toxic messages back to him. Effectively what's happened beyond there is he's just had to stop working on it. And I believe there was something to do with like the audio engineer just basically remixing some of the tracks and just doing all these fucking weird shit.
We'll get there. But like the whole thing we mentioned at the start, Cap, was that he wasn't able to tie the music to levels.
Yes.
So he was just creating stuff. And when they came and actually started getting more developed into the game, they realized a lot of the music that had been written Mick didn't fit. And they were like, well, we can't use this. We've got to reject this. And we can't use this. And it turns out that they, because of all this stuff getting rejected, they weren't prepared to pay him. This was his full-time job, dude. For him to get his first paycheck, it took them 11 months from the day he signed the contract to get paid, which is just fucking like ridiculous. It's a long
time. Just a quick correction, and thank you, Jim. ID Software, actually, who Mick had issues with, not Bethesda, though Bethesda like kind of owned the Doom IP, etc. But ID Software are the ones that have been developing it. So, yeah, thank you for that. In the sea of all the bullshit, it's hard to kind of get your lines straight. But yeah, so effectively, that's kind of where this all went. Now, time's passed. Marty's basically thrown Mick under the bus as public outcry because of the shitty OST has come out. And eventually Mick's gone, well, this is just fucking bullshit. And they even put a six-figure gag order onto Mick, saying, "Hey, don't talk about it. We'll make all the problems go away with this six-figure salary." And Mick's gone, "Fuck that, man. This is my entire professional career. Are you kidding me? I can't retire on that. Like, what are you talking about?"
Cap, with the OST, right? What happened was with the original Doom game, apparently it's quite hard. You can't just take the game music and put it all together and have an OST. You have to. Because what happens is, as the game develops, you go into a new zone, and the kind of music kind of updates. It's actually all the mastering.
It's got to be dynamic.
OST and everything else.
Yeah, when you move in between the zones, it's got to be dynamically playing as you move into things, so it plays the right track and it moves in between those tracks nicely. That's what you mean, right?
Now, the Doom Eternal OST CD was announced over Twitter with Mick's name on it, saying,
yeah,
the OST is coming with the pre-orders. Mick has made this stuff. And Mick wasn't even under contract for the company to put together the OST. So Mick's sitting there going, I know nothing about this. Where's my contract? And so it came closer and closer to the date where he's supposed to have his OST prepared. Ooh. So he reaches out to them and goes, guys, am I putting this OST together for you guys, or am I sitting on this? Like, what's happening? And he ends up getting this really rushed contract through where he has 30 days to prepare an OST, which isn't enough time. He has 27 days or something. Yeah. So 27 days. It ends up getting to this really crunch point where what they ended up doing is Marty Stratton ends up taking all of these tracks. He gets a sound engineer from ID Software to basically piece them together and put them over each other and chop and change it. You end up with this OST CD that's going out with the pre-orders that has 40 songs on it, half of which Mick hasn't been paid for because they were drafts that he'd sent through to the company, feasibility things. Some of them he didn't even own the rights to, that used some of the melodies from the original Doom that didn't credit the original artist. There's just like this absolute plethora of issues with this OST.
So bad.
He doesn't get to hear it. It just goes out and they sell it as part of the pre-orders. And it's just like a complete, absolute schmozzle of a release.
Yeah. Shit fight. Yeah. So basically what it's all come down to is that Marty Stratton was just this tyrannical, nasty piece of shit, essentially. And basically treated Mick Gordon like shit. But I think it's kind of, for me, Grizz, it's kind of exposed. Well, it hasn't really exposed anything, because we know this kind of shit happens in the game industry anyways, and other industries as well. But I feel like contractors just get treated like utter garbage. And I mean, I know you've had issues with being a contractor in the past.
No, mate, I've got issues with being a contractor right now, Cap. And the way that I see my job right now is completely different how I've seen it in the past. It's just a job. That's it. You're a number as a contractor on stuff, and you just got to like, it's particular line in here that he's written about the OST and the product, because this really was almost like a defamation case for him, Cap, you know?
Absolutely. He probably could still make one.
Well, the worst thing is he's written, produced all this stuff. They end up using half of it, but they also go put someone else's name alongside his on creating the music, a bloke that all he did was piece stuff together. So he's gone, he didn't hear the OST before it went out, and this was his statement on this. He goes, "Hearing the album for the first time, my heart sank. Alongside my direct contributions, there were an additional 47 tracks made by poorly editing together bits and pieces taken from my in-game scores. They exhibited the same thoughtless disregard for basic music fundamentals that plagued the preliminary edits ID Software showed him a week earlier and disagreed with. So it's just like
basically brutally fucked. And then they put his name on it. So
put his name on it.
I tell you what, though, Mick Gordon has been a fucking legend about it, really. Like, he's always really so done.
Nice. Hey,
he's just a hyper legend. Like, I don't know if you've ever watched him. He basically got, I think it was the Game Awards, and he basically played like the track off of Doom 2016 with his band. And it was just fucking baller. He was just like playing guitar, just like at this fucking Game Awards show. And it was fucking sick. But he is just a fucking, and he has been a real fucking and legend about it. And ID Software and Bethesda should be thanking their lucky fucking stars that he hasn't opened up a defamation case, because he wants to continue to work in this industry and he doesn't want to burn any bridges and he doesn't want to have anything like that.
Will there not be a defamation case here, Cap, do you think? Well, the other thing is that I wanted to say, whose story? The other thing is, Cap, we don't know how much of this he's got read receipts and stuff, but I guess there could be somewhere in between. We don't know who is telling truth or lies.
Who knows? I would think that Mick probably doesn't do anything, but if it was me, I probably would have released that expose and then taken it to court. But the thing is, the problem is now, how do you take it to court? Because that probably gets used as evidence and like might be used against him. And like, I don't know, that might not be conducive to an easy court case. I'm not a lawyer, unfortunately, but so I can't really comment on that much, but I would imagine that expose probably would make things harder for Mick potentially. So because like Bethesda and ID might then counter sue and go, well, you've defamed us because you wrote that expose. And it's like, yeah, but it's true.
Dude, this is the other thing that's fucking crazy, right? He was submitting stuff through to Bethesda or ID Software, and they were going, no, this is not good enough. We're not going to use it. We're not going to pay you for it.
Yeah.
And then it ends up in the game.
Yeah.
So they literally owe him money for stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. But it's even more interesting because it kind of showed me how these things get paid for, because I didn't realize, but they get paid on number of minutes of... Yeah. Of scored music that goes into games, not like here's a retainer, here's this, here's that. They just get paid on minutes. So if they spend hours and hours, and I don't know what the rate's like, maybe that kind of works out in the end. But like ultimately, depending, you could really fuck yourself over. And Mick kind of did.
They must have been trying to save money, Cap, because there's a bit in there that talks about apparently they wanted to have expiration music when you weren't in a particular zone, but. It was just expiration music that was looping. Originally, they only had 30 seconds of expiration music.
Oh, yeah. And, that's some fucking SNES Nintendo shit.
Yeah. And Mick turned around and said, oh, no, we should have more. Yeah, definitely.
Maybe
more
like
than that,
a few minutes. Yeah. Maybe more. maybe a couple of tracks.
So I wonder if they were like really trying to.
No, I'll tell you what, though, Grizz. Like, I will say, like, in older games, like you think about the most memorable tracks. Like I think about like Zelda games where it's like, and just over and over again, it's like 10 seconds of music.
It is like 10 seconds. Very true. Yeah, Bubble Bobble's the one that.
I mean, obviously, we're in a different era now and like a bit more as expected, especially from a game like Doom. But honestly, overall, it just sounds like mismanagement. It sounds like Marty was a bit tyrannical and maybe incompetent. Lots of major scheduling issues which bled into the music stuff, but also this is just fucked. Like this is just not on. Like poor Mick Gordon, I feel fucking terrible for the guy.
Absolutely.
But again,
me too, mate.
What
absolutely
a legend. What a legend.
And for him to endure that, mate, since 2020 or 3 years or whenever that Reddit post came out, and for him to have the knowledge to kind of get all of his ducks in a row to release this statement. Now the interesting thing is, Cap, if you go and search the Reddit post from the original. No, it got taken off, and then apparently Mick said, no, don't take it off. I would like it to still be there, but can we put a post at the front of it that highlights my response to the statement? And so that's what's happened. If you go look at that post, Reddit post, the original Reddit post is still there, and then right at the top, a moderator has gone and said, yeah, a lot of this stuff is controversial, whatever. You can go read Marty's response to this post.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, sorry, not Marty's, Mick.
Mick's
response to Marty's thing. Yeah. Man, crazy fucking story. But we can't really delve too much in because we've got more shit to talk about. But we could talk about this for fucking days. But yeah, so many fucking things. I think one thing I will finally say, Grizz, is I feel like gaming has this especially games like Doom, World of Warcraft, and a few other like sort of high profile games, special AAA stuff. I feel like some of these game designers get put on a pedestal by the fans and become almost like rock stars. And then they just feel like they can do whatever the fuck they want, become completely toxic human beings. And we've seen what's happened at Blizzard with all sexual abuse allegations. And I feel like maybe Marty's in a similar way. He just thought he was fucking the king dick. He thought he could do no wrong. Doom comes out, it's fucking average, and had to eat his words, and then just tried to throw everyone else under the bus because it's a gigantic piece of shit, allegedly.
I really hope that because apparently Bethesda were easy to deal with. It was when he had contact with old mate that was the issue. So I hope they hold him accountable for some of that stuff, and I hope we'll hear more. We will bring you the news when it comes.
Any developments, you'll hear about it. But there you go. Now, Grizz, Japan, you heard of it?
Yeah.
Great place to go. I haven't been there, but I hear it's fucking amazing.
I haven't been there either.
Yeah, I need to get over there at some point. But brother's been, anyways, long story short, PC gaming in Japan's never been a particularly strong market for Japan. But in the last 3 years, it's doubled in size, which is massive for them. Now, Japan is traditionally a more sort of mobile gaming market because I just think it's kind of a bit more conducive to the way that they live their life. They tend to spend a lot, they work a lot of overtime. They tend to be on public transport a lot, so they do a lot of mobile gaming because they can have it in their hand and all that kind of stuff. So, anyways, long story short, PC is fucking flourishing.
Nuts.
Which is kind of cool. There's not an awful lot to say about this, but I just kind of wanted to highlight it because obviously it's quite different to other places in the world, but also kind of maybe, and in our next story, we've got to do the OGR poll, but we'll do that after this in a second. I just think it kind of highlights this idea of how PC gaming is kind of, I guess, sort of becoming a little bit more important now that we've gone through a global pandemic, basically, you know? And I also think we're seeing, and we'll get to this story shortly, but we're seeing a lot of traditionally console-first developers put their games out on PC. So I'm thinking games like Final Fantasy, a lot of Sony games are now coming out as well.
That was one thing that I wanted to ask you about God of War, Cap. We obviously had the last God of War come out on PC now. Yeah. Do we see Ragnarok eventually coming to PC as well?
I think definitely eventually. When will it come out? I'm not too sure. Probably given a year or so. I mean, I wonder if we'll get any DLC. We didn't get DLC for the first game, did we?
Yeah.
No, they just went straight into Ragnarok. Mm. Maybe we won't get DLC for this, but anyways, the... It's just quite an interesting kind of story to come out because, I just think the characteristics as to why this has happened is particularly interesting. Mm-hmm. Just with like the fact that we do have even things like blockchain in gaming. Blockchain's quite popular in Japan. Like you think about things like Konami and the way that people have been implementing shit into their games. It's quite an interesting overall.
They're also saying here, Cap, that and this makes sense because I reckon this is a bit of a case for us too, but the lack of current gen consoles also playing a part in that.
Which again, Corona, that's the reason we didn't really have as many consoles is because Corona kind of fucked our, making of the consoles. Silicon and shit.
Yeah, silicon like that. Stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
Generation of the silicon. Mm. So I mean, kind of a small story, but one I just kind of wanted to highlight.
I didn't realize this. Apparently, Steam has drastically improved the store presence over there.
I wonder what that actually looks like. Is it just like better translated, or are they targeting their users better? Like,
it says here that they didn't offer prices in yen, as an example. So the usability is much better. Steam, what does it say? Physical Steam top-up cards are available in Japan now as well, where they weren't previously. So,
changing to currency definitely. Because, dude, I remember back in the day, you had to pay in USD for Steam games in Australia.
Right. You did too, yeah.
Yeah. Because a lot of countries didn't have native currency for their Steam shopfront. Like I kind of vaguely remember when Canada got theirs because I think they might have been second to get it, or maybe it was England. or Europe or something. I'm pretty sure it was Canada, but I remember that being a fucking huge deal and people were shitting their pants because they're like, oh, me next. So yeah.
Now, there's an interesting point here, Cap, that a little factoid here. 40 of the 60 games showcased at Japan's Big Six video game studio at the Tokyo Games Show this year were compatible with Steam, and only 38 for the PS5. So we saw
That's interesting.
Yeah, we saw more developers coming out and showcasing more Steam games than console-related ones.
I still think that console's going to have a huge place in Japan because, I mean, Sony is traditionally kind of the Japanese kind of console, the Sony PlayStation, just because, you know, they've had the Final Fantasies and they've had all that other shit like on their console, like Devil May Cry and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we'll continue to see the popularity of PlayStation there, but it is cool to see PC gaming kind of picking up. And it looks like PUBG was actually quite big in Japan. And obviously they had their own mobile iteration as well. So that must have sort of got people across there as well. So, but yeah, ultimately, Grizz, I just thought it was very, very fascinating.
What do you think about, what do you reckon the figures are for Aussie? So do you think PC gaming is rising in Aussie, or do you think it's consoles still reigning supreme?
Do you know what? I think PC gaming is more achievable these days and less enthusiast. Yeah. Like, you can quite easily just go and buy a pre-made build off the shelf now. I mean, and obviously you could in the olden days.
Even the laptops can run most of the stuff that you want to run.
Exactly. I think there's more options. I mean, even look at shit like the Steam Deck, Grizz. You know, that's the fucking the switch of PC gaming, right? Like,
would you call that PC gaming, Cap?
Well, it runs Steam, so technically it is. It's just a really shit PC. But yeah, so I don't know. Overall, Japan's coming on up. Mm-hmm. Now, I did sort of allude to this, but Final Fantasy 16's developers had a bit of a powwow recently with IGN. Now, there's a few major things I kind of wanted to pull out of this. They've kind of recognized that the storylines have become a little bit more mature, Grizz. Now, they did kind of say, because IGN kind of worded it in a way, they were like, oh, things are a bit more violent, mature and violent. And they were like, well, the issue is if you want to tell... Because I guess they kind of worded it in a funny way for me. They kind of almost made it seem like it was a bad idea to make a game violent after they've made all these other games not so violent. But the thing is, like, I really liked the way the developer now, what's his name? I'm going to fucking butcher this, but we'll give it a crack. Creative director, Kazutoyo Mahiro. He's my hero. Anyways, but yeah, anyway, so basically he kind of said, look, it's very difficult to tell a mature story without violence, especially about warring nations. How do you tell that story? He even likened the way that when it comes to, like, you know, omitting blood makes things very difficult, because if people are fighting, of course there's going to be blood, and when you don't have that blood there, it's very obvious. And if you're using next generation graphics and stuff, it's quite jarring. So we needed to include it. Yeah. And I just found that so interesting from a game development perspective. And it's so true. Like, that is a really important factor of war and fighting is a bit of bloodshed. And I think it kind of, you know, obviously, you know, you're going to have an audience and stuff. Like, you're probably not going to want to show that to kids, but for the people that want to consume this, I think it's important for just immersion. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And they kind of go on to say here that they're going for a realistic game here, more so than the others, right? And just to reiterate what you said, they weren't trying to make it more extreme. They just wanted to show things more realistically and naturally. So, like you say, when you have a blood splatter or someone gets sliced with a sword, you're going to see blood, right?
Yeah. So, absolutely.
You're not going to have a realistic, natural looking game if you leave those things out, you know?
Yeah. And it only makes sense. Like, they kind of also said that, you know, they didn't want to tell a juvenile story, basically, because, and ultimately, let's be honest, you know, the people that are playing these games are a lot of probably mostly boomers because they've stuck around with the series since probably maybe their first one was Final Fantasy VII, maybe VI, maybe even earlier. I think, you know, you need to kind of evolve with your demographic, right? It would be really interesting to do like an actual significant marketing questionnaire campaign to see who are playing these games, because I promise you it's mostly older people.
I'm sure they're aware of it. And that kind of goes on with also popular media as well, Cap, because in that same article it goes on about how the dev team gets questioned around whether they see Game of Thrones and Witcher references and stylizations as being, you know, something they've tried to incorporate into their game. And their answer was interesting because they said, we didn't on purpose, but a lot of the dev team are fans of those.
So they're going to bleed in naturally, right?
They're going to bleed in naturally as they're creating this more realistic game, you know?
I think the interesting one is he said, like, you know, you might even argue that some of the characters, because they're cocky, maybe they're a bit like Indiana Jones. Like, but the thing is, we didn't make it like Indiana Jones. So, I think it's very interesting, though. Obviously, a lot of even us on this show, we're like, dude, I'm getting major Game of Thrones vibes. So,
You said it very early on, mate. But let's be honest, though, like, if you look at that type of narrative and storytelling, how successful has it been, Cap? You know, both Game of Thrones and Witcher.
Hugely. But I also think, Grizz, like, so going back to this whole idea of deviating from the juvenile storyline, like, thinking about gaming in general, like, I think a Final Fantasy game generally is probably aimed, you know, even the earlier titles were probably aimed at teenagers. Teenagers are consuming media that are way more violent and graphic than what was back in those days. So obviously I think like, older forms of media, such as Final Fantasy, they're going to have to, if they want to be relevant to that demographic, they're going to have to obviously change as well. I mean, I would prefer a more mature story, personally, but I love Final Fantasy, so if we can marry the two, fucking great, and it seems like they've done that.
I'm kind of thinking, as you're saying this to me, Cap, I mean, when was your first Resident Evil game? How old were you?
Actually, good point. I played it collaboratively with a mate, probably would have been like, I don't know, early high school, maybe.
Yeah,
I think.
I'd say so.
Yeah, maybe. And I might have been first year of high school because I didn't have a Sony PlayStation, and I played it with my mate who was like, "Have you played Resident Evil before?" And I was like, "No, but I've heard of it." And so then, yeah, scary, basically, man. Yeah, for sort of to shit my pants. So,
I kind of agree with you. I think that this kind of media is being watched at an earlier age, and I think that maybe the cutesy stuff might not have as much of a relevant place in gaming.
Yeah,
I think really targeting the young kids.
Yeah,
I mean, because let's be honest, anime, like, Final Fantasy, mate, as a whole, was a reasonably complex game to
oh,
to
dude, pick when up. You think about Final Fantasy VII as a point in gaming time, that was so far ahead. You know, having kind of like a terrorist kind of backdrop story, but then you're also having characters that are dying. You know, like the most classic scene is Sephiroth driving a massive sword through Aerith.
Right.
You know, that was crazy. And the graphics back in those days, people were just like, holy shit, you know, and then you look back at it now and you're like, it's like two polygons.
Dude, I remember it looking so amazing. I remember that's the reason why PlayStation there was that whole battle, PlayStation N64. The PlayStation cutscenes, particularly the Final Fantasy ones, were just like
absolutely
chef's kiss.
Yeah,
very nice.
So crazy. But and look, I think just one final thing, and they kind of like brought up the idea of diversity in the new game, which I just thought it was kind of interesting in general. They kind of said they didn't see any kind of people of color in their game yet, and the producer came along and kind of just said, look, like, because of the way we've developed this story and the geographical setting, and it's kind of based on loosely a modern day Earth, but set in like medieval times. This is kind of we've kind of introduced diversity in different ways, not purely just kind of through, I guess, skin color. So I actually found that response to be incredibly interesting just in the way, because it must be interesting, like, how do you, because you don't want to just shoehorn things in there and it just be really shitty attempts at being, because I mean, I don't know how other people want to see that, but I just find that really, like, low. I don't know, how do you kind of feel about that, Grizz? Like, I kind of feel like if I'm going to see, like, a diverse character, I'd like it to be a good, well thought out diverse character, not someone that is just put in there for the sake of being diverse.
Fit,
you know what I mean?
It needs to fit the role that it's trying to achieve, doesn't it?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just found that overall interesting, just in the way that they kind of talked about how, I guess in general, just how they kind of went about developing it, you know? But yeah, overall, I think Final Fantasy 16 is looking really fucking good. They also talked a little bit more about the gods and, well, that they're calling icons. In the story, which they kind of alluded to the fact that, hey, don't get there's a few in there, so you know, don't get too don't go looking for hidden ones or anything like that, because
overall, Cap, you're a fan of the new approach, mate. Get out of the cutesy and into the new age.
I really liked Final Fantasy 15. The more recent one that had Noxus, and I think his name was Noxus. I think they did a good job with that, but it kind of still was suffering from this kind of hangover of the storyline not really, there was just parts of it that were just kind of like, oh, this is fucking lame, or like, you know, who are your target audience? Like, what's going on here? Like, 2-year-olds?
It was like they've had more thought about it for this run in.
Exactly. For sure. I think the more mature storyline is going to be awesome. So I'm very, very excited for that. So yeah, Final Fantasy 16 looking fucking good. Now, I tell you what else is looking really good, Grizz. Pokemon Scarlet and Violet.
Oh, how do you know it's looking good, Cap?
Because there's been a lot of leaks.
Mate, like, honestly, it's like a fucking leaky ship at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of Pokemon fans out there, and just seriously, get on your socials and just block everything Pokemon for a period of time. Trigger warning on this one, Pav. We're not going to spoil anything, I don't think.
No, but we're not going to really.
Just spoiler alert. Minor spoiler warnings, just in case. We're talking about Pokemon. Well, look,
I'm going to keep this pretty quick, but essentially what has happened, this game is not due for release till, I think it's next week, Cap, or the 19th or something maybe, but someone streamed like 20 hours of gameplay. Someone was streaming it on Twitch.
Illegally,
someone was
FYI.
Streaming it on Trovo. Yeah, and literally the full game just going to town. The chat was absolutely popping. I posted it in the OGR Facebook thread, and I popped in there myself and had a bit of a look. And yeah, literally just playing the game, going nuts.
Which is fucking crazy. Now, a bunch of other, like, outside of just that stream, a lot of stuff has kind of been leaked online. So I always wonder how this shit gets out, because people are suggesting
family testers or something.
I don't know. Like, has someone stolen a copy? Like, Pav, do you know much about how they got the copy?
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure these kind of copies can be sent early under embargo to, like, distributors. And it could be rogue employees, or maybe a box got stolen. I don't know. Could be.
Yeah, I've heard of people like EB receiving games ahead of time and stuff like that. Even some people pre-orders can get their games ahead of time and things, can't they? Like some people in certain situations.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Now, I think so we still hadn't seen things like evolutions for the starter Pokemon. Those are all available now. So again, if you want that to be a surprise, probably avoid social media. I am not going to say much about the evolutions at all, but I'm just going to say Fucoco is definitely my starter Pokemon based on the evolutions. It looks fucking sick. Have you seen those yet? You have seen them. Okay. Who are you thinking? Who are we thinking?
I'm not a fan of any of the finals, but I think Fucoco is still my favorite, but I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought that'd be average too, but still.
Apparently
still
every new Pokemon in Scarlet and Violet has been leaked, by the way, boys. If you want, you can literally get the fucking list.
Wow.
Every Pokemon for that
game. Pokedex. Holy shit. Wow. Okay. That's kind of brutal. And I think, like, I wonder what Game Freak are they going into meltdown right now? Are they putting up, like, cease and desists? Like, what's the go? Like,
I don't know, mate. 004's got the same issue with those. Surely they're going to stop doing the family. 004's got to stop doing the family. Oh,
Blizzard's going to have to, man, because like, and probably Game Freaks will be. I don't know. Again, this might be an early copy because that was another thing is they were saying that the streamer, when they were getting to kind of open areas, the frame rate just tanks real hard. So maybe it doesn't have day one patches applied to the game, but that does worry me. Again, we've had the same discussion. The Switch needs to fucking die. We need a new king. You know, so I hope that Nintendo's looking at this game and going, fuck, we can't even create a reasonable open world Pokemon game anymore because we're so fucking, you know, hardware limited. And Ho and Honey's in the chat not getting particularly happy about the words
I'm saying.
Shut
your mouth, Cap. Yeah, fuck.
It is time for a fucking upgrade, Nintendo. Thank you very much. Where's my Switch Pro? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so overall, a lot of fucking leaks, Grizz. So
yep.
Poor old Game Freak trying to quickly patch up the boat as we speak. But I mean, it's probably not going to do much help with the game releasing, what, this week? Isn't this week?
I think it's this week, mate. I think it's the 19th. Could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that.
I thought it was 18th.
18th, Friday. It's on Friday.
Yeah. Friday.
Friday, baby. I'll probably go and grab a copy and play Fucoco. You go, Fucoco. There you go.
You go.
Yeah, so very leaky. Now, Grizz, we forgot to do the OGR poll, so let's fucking dive straight into that.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. So, Grizz, this week we wanted to know the answer to a simple question.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. What's better, new school Doom or old school Doom? Okay, so we asked that question. Now, Grizz, do you want to give us the breakdown of the votes?
Yeah, sure. Old school Doom brought up the rear with 37% of the vote. New School Doom won with 62.5. Now, I voted for New School Doom, but
so did I.
I feel like I wanted to break this down a bit, Cap, because I like them for different things.
Yeah.
Probably should have put that in the comments. Put that kind of shit in the comments next time you do it.
We kind of said that. Like, let us know why in the comments.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had the opportunity. We got
the nostalgia obviously is massive, but when you're trying to compare a game that hasn't got even like mouse look. That is very old. I think the nostalgia is better, but seriously, dude, the 2016 Doom was just a banging game.
It was honestly the perfect iteration on a game like that, because how do you do, I mean, obviously we had Doom 64 and we also had the, I think it was the 2000 and something, 2003 Doom that was on console, like Xbox and stuff. And that was actually legitimately fucking scary. So I think those were good iterations on it, but like, how do you iterate again in the new world? I guess you could probably have gone full horror or do what they did, where they made this banging, you know, demonic arcade retro kind of, well, not retro, but arcade shooter that has this insanely amazing fucking metal soundtrack that just was so fucking good and kind of really like tongue in cheeked in on itself on the whole kind of metal kind of thing. Going on with it. So, and I think indie games like Hellsinger, that music,
bit of inspiration like, from it. Yeah,
absolutely. That on the beat shooter game probably took inspo from this just as well. But yeah, I for the same reason thought New School Doom was, well, again, better. How do you compare the two? I know it's a bit of a loaded question, but you know, old school Doom will always be, you know, this nostalgic, incredible point in time. Similarly to a game like Final Fantasy VII, where it just changed the way people thought about video games. And New School Doom just did the perfect rendition of that game in the current era, I think. So
I agree, mate. I agree. Now, we had a comment from Gamma here, Cap, that said, first time I ever played Doom was the PC 1995 version, which had DirectX support, and the game was amazing in terms of graphics, gameplay, and overall fun. I own this, which includes a Doom 1, 2, 3 and also Doom 64 physical. And it's like a full collector's edition. It's crazy, man, because do you remember that? Like the fucking originals were floppy disks, mate. So
I think the most recent DirectX is 12 or something like that. So there's been a few iterations on the DirectX, the DirectX suite of programming interfaces. So I thought he shared a screenshot of the collector's edition, and it's got like that little 8 gig USB floppy drive, which I just thought was so baller. Love that so much. Very
you know what's
cool.
Really funny? I actually saw a meme the other day. This is a bit off topic, Kat, but a lot of games still, when you save the game, it'll come up with a little either CD loading to say it's saving or a floppy disk to say it's saving. Now, yeah. My kids wouldn't know what either of those are,
absolutely.
My two young ones.
Yeah.
So yeah. How bizarre is that? They just see that as like the saving icon without knowing that they are floppy
what
disks
about, like,
and CDs.
What about phones and stuff, dude? Because, like, even think about phones these days. You know, think about the old, like, turn the dial phones. Yeah. Like, and they're often used as, like, emojis and stuff. Kids probably don't know what the fuck that is.
The old, we had one of those as well.
Even having a handpiece like that, you just use a mobile phone these days. So, there's a lot of things like that that, I don't know, just probably lose meaning to the newer generation of kids these days. Even like VCR tapes. Like, have you ever seen those like YouTube series where it's like kids like get given a Game Boy and they're like, what do you think this is? And they're just like, what the fuck is this? Yeah, or a Tamagotchi or something. They're like, I have never seen this in my life. I don't know what this is. But yeah. Now, Moosey also said, taking nostalgia out of the question, I reckon the new Doom is better. I even have a soft spot for Doom 3, which is, that horror game.
Chris, you had the same answer as me, pretty much. Yes, taking nostalgia out of the equation. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They absolutely nailed the horror atmosphere for Doom 3. I think the new Doom takes it for me only by a bit. OG Doom can't be denied its pioneering job. Exactly. You know, it pioneered a genre.
Soundtrack was so good,
classic.
Man. Yeah.
Classic. And hey, we've got John Romero, who's one of the original Doom programmers, working on a new game. So maybe we'll get something else pretty fucking cool. So there you go. Now, guys, as always, we post an OGR poll every weekend. So all you have to do is go and follow us on Twitter. That's twitter.com/OGR show. And we're going to be buying our little tick soon, probably. I don't know. Should we do that?
Yeah.
Is that worth it?
We'll take it out of the PC Pev fund.
$8 that goes into Elon Musk's
pocket.
We can
edit the tweets that I post that have spelling mistakes in them.
Oh, can you edit tweets?
Does it allow you to edit now?
Or is that Twitter Blue? Is it the same thing?
It's the same thing.
Twitter Blue.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure with Twitter Blue, you can edit your tweets.
I have fucked up a lot of tweets. I don't want to give you the opportunity to fix your fucked up tweets.
I'm going to edit your tweet.
Maybe that can be our next... that can be our next week's poll. Should we subscribe to Twitter Blue?
Actually, that's a good idea. Okay, someone write that down. We're gonna ask that for sure. So there you go. So yeah, go and follow the Twitter, and we'll be posting something every weekend as we remember. And it'll be something to do with the following week's chats. So there you go. Now, as always, we also have the quick fire round, Grizz. So Pav, play the stinger. Go on, mate.
Look what
don't give me that.
Every
don't do it.
We rarely do this.
Yeah, he's going to prep another one.
This quickfire is brought to you by
DJ Francesco.
I'm telling you, he's going to kill me. The one week he listens to this podcast.
I love it so much. It's just my favorite thing in the world. All right. So first cab off the rank, guys. Red Dead Redemption, the franchise, has hit 70 million units sold.
Massive. Huge.
That's unbelievable. So that's two
spoilers.
Games, man.
It was all Kamikaze Cracker. Bought every one of those.
Bought it 70 million times. Honestly, that's absolutely fucking astronomical. So that's 24 million for Red Dead Redemption 1 and 46 million for Red Dead Redemption 2. So, almost doubled the amount for number 2, which is honestly crazy. So I'm sure that we'll probably see another iteration of that game eventually. So there you fucking go. All right. You
want to
take the next one, Grizz?
Sure, mate. Guys, rest in peace. The Batman actor Kevin Conroy has died at the age 66.
Yep. So, Kev, rest in peace, mate. Played Batman in the animated series. And you also did Arkham Knight and Arkham City in the video game. So, yeah, incredibly storied voice actor. And, just a really sad. So
66
see a guy like
is
that guy.
quite young, Cap, I feel, these days to pass.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what sort of happened, but regardless, incredibly sad. A lot of people sort of, giving out tributes to Conroy, James Gunn, Troy Baker, the voice artist, and a bunch of other, kind of legends like, Jack Quaid and et cetera. So
So yeah, very, very sad times. So rest in peace, Kevin, and you know, condolences to the family. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, Grizz.
Yes, sir.
Praise the sun, my friend. The Dark Souls remastered online features have finally been restored.
I'm praising.
All is well in Lordaeron. So there you go. So we've had Dark Souls 3 restored. Dark Souls 2 has been restored. Now they finally got around to fixing up Dark Souls remasters. So the whole trilogy, you can go and play it on PC again. All good. Don't worry. It's fine. They fixed the servers. People can't, you know, inject code into your system anymore. So, yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
I'm going to have them. Now, Cap, this is interesting. I actually really fucking like this. I bet more companies should do this. Nintendo's Japanese arm has implemented a new policy in which its repairs staff can refuse to fix or replace a product if the customer who submitted it behaves in an abusive manner.
Big fan of this as well, Grizz.
If you're waiting for your Nintendo Switch to be repaired and you ring them up and go, "Oi, you dickhead," and abuse them.
Oi.
It's not going to repair it
for you. I'm supposed to give my Switch a 3080 so I can actually play the video games on it. Got him. Yeah, I think lots of businesses should do that. I think about retail these days, and it honestly gives me a fucking headache thinking about the stupid fucking customers you have to deal with. I'd love to see like Maccas and stuff do this. I just think it would be amazing, but also probably would lead to some violence, I guess. But yeah, good on them. Like, yeah, look after your employees.
I did a bunch of bar work, man. I don't reckon I could do it now.
No, neither. Just, no way.
You end up with drunk idiots every night and always so patient and everything else.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, it's just, yeah, I absolutely could not do retail as a job anymore. And hats off to you if you are able to deal with members of the public, because I've met a few members of the public and there's a lot of shit ones out there. There's a lot of good ones, but there's a lot of shit ones. So there you go. Now, Grizz, Baldur's Gate 3 is getting new features and a release date announcement in December. About fucking time.
Yeah.
I've been waiting to play this game for ages, but it's been, just been perpetually in early fucking, what's it called? Early access.
We've seen bits and pieces, haven't we? But this looks great, man. It kind of looks like a...
Oh, it looks so good.
Looks like Divinity Original Sin, but I feel like with more D&D elements kind of entwined and a little bit...
Well, I mean, Baldur's Gate is set
in... Use the rule set, doesn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. But it's also it's set in... like the D&D kind of
that's right yeah
place like the what are they called, the Forgotten Realms fucking shit. So you know they allude to things like Neverwinter and all that kind of shit in Baldur's Gate and so it takes place in the lore of Dungeons and Dragons, which is fucking cool, man. Okay, so they've actually, you know, I feel like what's their name, Larian Studios, like taking their Divinity equation into Baldur's Gate. The perfect game, man.
Pretty cool.
Perfect game for this. So it's exciting.
Now, Cap, this is a story that I don't feel like is really a story because it's just like it's just like a headline. Sonic Frontiers has smashed the series record for concurrent players on Steam.
Big news.
Which is only, well, it's not bad. It's 19,000 concurrent on Steam. But when you look at that against something like fucking...
Versus Elden Ring that had like millions of players.
It's got things like Sonic Frontiers to compete with and Sonic Mania and... No, Sonic... Sorry. Sonic Mania to compete with, which was basically grabbing all the old games and going, here, have them all on Steam. So anyway, it is
interesting. There's a lot of issues with that particular release, if I remember correctly. But as we know, Grizz, based on the reviews we heard earlier for God of War, that Sonic Frontiers is better than God of War Ragnarok. So it makes sense that it'll have a really, really high concurrency.
Very true.
You know? Yeah. So there you go. Very fucking cool. Now, speaking of God of War Ragnarok, Grizz, it's the franchise's biggest launch ever.
Crazy,
it's
dude.
It's gone fucking haywire. Massive, massive, massive. So, basically, it's the it is the largest. Can't really give you a chart position, but they've obviously sold a shitload of copies.
Yeah,
I feel like can't find the exact number.
The success of the last God of War really paved the way for this one being so good on release, I reckon, because it was just such a game of the year, didn't it? I don't know. I feel like anyway, it's not taking away anything from God of War Ragnarok, but it came in with a very strong out of the gate reputation to follow for sure.
Yeah, they have, dude. They have done a lot of titles in the God of War IP. Yeah. Like there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 titles. Dude. Yeah. So that's like God of War, God of War 2, God of War Chains of Olympus, God of War 3, God of War Collection, which I guess doesn't really count. God of War Trilogy probably doesn't count either. God of War Ghost of Sparta, God of War Collection Volume 2, again, probably doesn't really count. So maybe there's like, maybe it is like 13 or something. God of War Ascension, God of War Collection again. So they re-released it. Oh, they re-released it for PS Vita. God of War 3 Remastered. So actually, there's probably 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games.
Okay.
With a lot of re-releases and remasters. So
A couple of re-releases, yeah.
Yeah. They're doing fucking pretty well, my friend.
Doing pretty good. Now, Cap, you're a Dragon Age fan, aren't you?
Big fan of Dragon Age, yep.
I think I played Dragon Age Inquisition was the one that I played. But if you are a Dragon Age fan, yeah, it was a good game. It was a fantastic game. I didn't know about this, Cap, but Dragon Age Absolution starts streaming on Netflix December 9. There is a TV series based on BioWare's popular video game. Coming December 9, mate. That's in like 3 weeks. It's pretty exciting.
I saw the trailer. I think it was a short trailer. But yeah, I think, dude, I'm pretty keen to watch this. I watched a little bit of the Dota anime, which kind of is reminiscent of what I saw. And also, what's that? That fucking Twitch D&D campaign.
Critical Role.
Critical Role has their own animated series now as well, which,
yeah,
again, similar kind of art style. So I think we're probably just in for more of this kind of stuff as people
the
realize.
The Mighty Nine.
Yeah, the Mighty Nine.
I listened to all of that. Actually, it's interesting. I haven't listened to any of the new campaign yet. I need to go do that.
You'll have to dive in, my friend.
Mm.
Well, there you go. Now, Google Stadia. They're doing the refunds this week, Chris. So if you had any refunds pending for Google Stadia, you should be getting your money soon. So be excited. Bucks. Google Stadia, as we know, Google's closed down its cloud gaming platform Stadia, and it is refunding things because it promised you that it'll be up forever. And guess what? It is not up forever. It is actually not getting closed down. And it has.
They're giving people physical bucks, or they're giving them like refund Google bucks?
Well, that's a good question. I assume the refunds would have to be money because, okay, I don't know, unless there was something in the contract that you signed, but I don't think so. So.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. But anyways, that's the show. That's the whole
show, baby. Banger.
That's the whole freaking thing. So
that's a great show, Cap. Lots of great stories in there. I liked that.
Yeah. I think that Mick Gordon thing takes the cake though. Like, holy fuck, what a poor dude. I feel terrible for that guy.
Yeah, he handled it so well.
Oh, absolutely. Imagine the mental anguish that you would be going through having to deal with that on the daily. Brutal. Yeah. Absolutely brutal. So, yeah, look, ultimately, I hope Mick Gordon gets some kind of retribution, whether that be financial or something happens to Marty Stratton in terms of his professional career. But I don't think Marty Stratton deserves to set foot in a game studio ever again, in all honesty. But if what he says is true, which I can only imagine would be. But, anyways, there you go. But, yeah, now, guys, as always, thank you so much for listening either via podcast or live here in the chat. I just want to say thanks to people like Kamikaze Cracker, Blindsided Moose, Straightjacket Jim, Ho and Honey, and a bunch of other fucking legends that have been hanging out here, including Snippo and Sukai. Khal Drogo was also floating around. But yeah, you too can join us every week, 7 p.m. AWST on Monday nights. That's again 7 p.m. AWST. Go and follow twitch.tv/OceanicGamingRadio. And you'll find us there. That's what we stream live. Otherwise, you can listen to us on your favorite podcasting platform, Spotify, iTunes, the whole lot. Now, if you do listen to us via your favorite podcasting platform, we would really appreciate it if you would go ahead and give us a review and make sure that it's 5 stars and gives us an incredible, gushing review of how good this podcast is. But look, in all honesty, a review would be really wonderful if you give us a cheeky review.
We've had one of those recently, Cap, and we didn't even have to pay the guy. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I think he actually pays us.
It's true.
So there you go. Thank you, J-Liz. We really appreciate it. Now, on top of that, if you can just sort of let friends know about this podcast, that'd be fucking cool. We want to grow organically. And if you know anyone that might enjoy listening to us talk shit for an hour and a half plus, yeah, send them our way. Now, we also have a Discord. You can come and join us on Discord. Simply just check the description of this podcast and or look in the Twitch chat right now. I'm sure you'll see the things. And we've also got a Patreon, which you can help to support us financially and pay for our crippling Twitter checklist point thing addiction. What do you call that? Checkmark. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway.
Twitter blue, something.
Yeah. Yeah. So, if you want to support our, our lofty goals of getting a Twitter checkmark. Yeah. Also fixing Pav's computer. But yeah, so there you go. You can go and follow us on patreon.com/ I'm pretty sure it's OGR show, but you're probably about to Google it or some shit, or might be even be listed somewhere. So go and look. That's all from us. That's all from you. We'll catch you guys next week. Go and tell people about us. We love you. And look after yourselves. Kisses.
See you later, nerds.
Bye-bye.